Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about prototypes and the people who use them and the people who can't use them. So I'm going to give a talk on my way back from Katoomba. My son just had one of those days, like wanted a lift in, thought, you know, what the heck, I'll take one in, driving down, and now the weather is substantially improving in Australia. And it's, well, that being said, it's 11 degrees outside. It's still pretty nippy and chilly. Okay, so what is a prototype? Well, one can obviously think it's something you build up to do something. And I've got a series of ideas about prototypes. And what's the difference between, you know, there is a prototype, if it's, there's it's a concept of a prototype, what is not a prototype? Well, a prototype is a system that does something either completely or some aspect that you want to look at. So a prototype is a thinking aid. And the thing it's not is it's not merchandisable. It's not credentialed. So it's there and it's just put up there and we're looking at it. So you might be able to build an engine which is an aircraft engine, which has got twice the fuel efficiency, and you could go to an airline with your prototype and you couldn't sell it. It's not merchandisable. So if I could have a prototype of a car and it's not fully signed off, credentialed. That's a very crude area, but it's important for people because a lot of people only work with credentialed ideas. You know, if you never analyze ideas yourself, they have to be credentialed by someone else. It's a third-party credentialing. So a prototype doesn't yet have third-party credentialing. Now, I'm going to go into that a little bit later, but we've got sort of three types of prototypes within a particular prototype, which is on its journey to credentialing. One is the concept prototype. Concept prototype is just a physical space holder where you assemble the parts. You put the parts together, just almost like a notepad, a concept prototype. Now, yeah, I suppose we could prototype in terms of development. Then there's the research prototype. That is where it's put together, but with the parts such that they can vary, so you can adjust and move that prototype within space before you move towards its credentialing journey, which is a production prototype, which is a prototype which you will qualify. Once it's qualified, it's merchandisable. So that's a well-known sequence from research lab into commercialization. Then there's a series of prototypes. There's the abstract prototype, there's the conceptual prototype, there's the concrete prototype, and then there's the mathematical prototype. That's where you simulate it mathematically. And really, mathematical is a concept prototype where the concepts are testable with mathematics. So it sort of sits between concrete and abstract. And now scientists will recognise that as a model, and indeed prototypes are sort of just one step, is sort of a scientific model in a non-scientific context, where it's actually left the realm of science and can interact with a wide variety of people. So there's that. And now the thing is that you may need more than one type of prototype. That is, you may have the prototype that you're producing, but you also have the prototype, the other test things which go into the situation. So the example I've used is the prototype of a automated gate opener in a farm. Now you might build a scale model. At a certain point, a model prototype, they're almost the same thing to go. But a model is something which you do, I suppose, internally to investigation. A prototype's got a little bit more external stuff. A prototype automatically is part of a journey. A prototype means it's going to eventually be something else, whereas a model is you build a model, make a conclusion, and throw it out. A prototype, you develop a prototype. You don't develop a model. That might be the difference. But the other thing I was going to say is that models, you might need more than one model. You may have the model of the thing that you're doing, and you need for it to do. You have to have the objects that it operates on, and so essentially you might need as many models as necessary to conduct the entire system. So I'd say in the case of a model where you've got a tool which does it, you may need a model which helps people assess, a model of an assessment tool of when to use it. So, for instance, say you may have a new termite bait which only works in dry conditions, blah, 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 blah. And it works very well with a certain expertise. So your model works with expertise. And you, as part of your model to go forward, you now need your operator to have this expertise. So you build a model of an expertise device that person can use. And so your particular model by itself will not make sense, or your prototype will not make sense. And you have to actually put forward a series of prototypes. So you've got this big divide between a merchandisable thing. So one of the things is that a model has a whole lot of thinking tentacles attached to it, a prototype. So people are still thinking, does it work, analysing it and stuff like that. Now, the thing is that the commercial stuff is we've developed things that are modular without tentacles. So the ultimate thing we have invented to be able to get value without without tentacles is the idea of a promise. Which is like, what we've done is we've made a promise, a whole series of IOUs, and it's become monies. So we've made the promise merchandisable by actually credentialing the promise. Now, a credential promise of so much is a dollar. So we've put the idea of a credential promise, and everyone's agreed that it's a credential promise. So at a certain point, you don't have to really think and analyze, you go too deep. And so essentially, people dealing with prototypes are not superficial people. They're slightly deeper people. They're able to actually hang around. So if you've got someone who's got very short time frames, very effective, can work very well in the commercial world, where it's all perceptions and stuff like that. So if you've got perceptions, agreed, customary value, that person will see the prototype as a liability. Immediately, they will see their value is being able to pick commercially viable. So you've got a whole system out there where there's lots of product offerings, and you've got a genuine product, two products which look the same, but one which will last a longer period of time. So one of the things is that people, although you can be critical of someone who is on the merchandisable thing, who don't go very deeply, they do think in terms of how that will interact with other people. Systems exist, and they do have, and they're expert in knowing, making the assumption that the entire system is full of people like themselves, and as long as they stick to that, so they've sort of got an inertia of never changing mentally, because they know that the person in the next shop, there'll be a person in the next shop just like them who will not have any tolerance of prototypes or needs commercialized merchandisability. So you obviously need a certain amount of merchandisability so that everything is credentialed and you can take a bolt across and the components of that particular bolt are credentialed. You know that bolt will have a certain strength, it's tested, and people may not know that, but they buy the idea that they buy it from a reputational, a reputable institution. So one of the things is that credentialing and reputation is pretty much the same. So credential is being able to buy reputation, or to, and reputation is quite good because, you know, I have a bolt, I have some concrete, I can actually talk about its properties with a reputation. So I can only use a certain grade concrete for a bridge or a certain thing. It's sort of like reputation is sort of like the money of credentialing money. We've got the entire system, and the entire system is really big, it's really huge, the economy, everything, 99% of what we do is there. So we, in a supermarket, there's all this trust. You know, we trust that the supermarket will give us good food and do all the right things. We pay a lot of money for that trust. And so there's certain things that we value besides creativity. We value trust. You know, in God we trust, or whatever it is. So when we purchase there, we trust there, and we also purchase for lack of knowledge of something. So a lot of value, or we value the knowledge of something, or when the knowledge is not there, the knowledge of something is a huge value, even though you could go out and test it. So if I have a new car, that will be worth $30,000. The moment I drive it out of the showroom around the corner, coming back, they will say, well, that's only $24,000. Well, it's no longer new. We don't know what you did. And so it's hard to say that your lack of knowledge can... there's this sort of counter-economy where I can add reputation and subtract, you know, a person or a thing can be a liability. They can subtract from a system. Now, this is interesting because the idea that something can subtract, you can actually manipulate people to be aggressive, a whole series of people, things to be aggressive for. Now, this all goes back to the idea of prototype, where you remove the issue of trust, you remove the issue of credentialing to enable creativity to come in. So, so you've got the degrees of prototyping in the prototype of journey. So a prototype is a model on a journey to credentialing. That might be one way of saying it. A prototype may need, these are the rules of prototyping. A prototyping may need a series of prototypes, A, to interact with, it interacts with, and for people to interact with it. This is an entire new system. And the reason that you have a prototype is that it is a low-cost, flexible way of producing something. So if I have a dam wall, I will have a risk that it will fail. So the idea is that you massively increase the failure rate, but reduce the cost, so I can get more prototypes through that fail, and then a prototype failing actually provides information, valuable information. So it's good to build several versions of an aircraft and have one blow up, but it's not good for people to fly in several versions of an aircraft and have one drop out of the sky. We can't say, well, therefore we know to do it. So there's risks and there's sort of safety precautions associated with. There's a whole set of economies with it. So there's this idea of what a prototype is, the structure of different prototypes, and that prototypes exist in this creativity space. And then this creativity space and this set of risks, because people are themselves, consider themselves either prototypes, so this is a person who's creative or credentialed, someone who is a, can provide value as a credentialer. So you've got all these things coming out. Now, that being said, one has to, if a prototype was a prototype and that was it, but a prototype has got all this social analysis with it, which on one aspect you could say holds it back, or it can fail and you do the failure analysis. So the prototype fails. Why does it fail? Well, it fails because simply it is a prototype. Prototypes do fail the merchandisability credentialing process. Someone engaging in prototypes is someone who's not there. So if you have someone who is, say, a heart surgeon and is going out the back doing all these wild things, you will have your question, will that person do exactly as I ask at a certain point in time? If you have someone, a risk-taking acrobatic aircraft pilot, and that person suddenly gets in a commercial airline, you go, oh my God, well, yes, in certain sorts of unusual circumstances, that person's going to be managed risk coming in. But majority of times where I want that person to put all their eggs in one commercialization basket, it's whether people see themselves as a credentialed service provider in the bigger economy. So 99% of what we do on the world, 99.9% of what we do on Earth is pretty much like what we did the day before. You know, there's very little new stuff that we do on Earth. over a century, we do everything completely new. But from day to day, it's pretty much the same. And that relies on people, the majority of people, doing exactly everything the same. And for them to do everything the same, they have to measure it as the same, be controlled the same, think the same, do all these things. And so these people are just naturally not good at prototyping. Now, given that we know that, you really need to measure that, have a way of measuring. And so one of the ways of measuring it is to do the double blind test, the placebo. That is a placebo test that you show something that people do use in a different context. It's credentialed in a different context. They have a look at it and they are they then criticize it because they have automatically a different, if they have a different evaluation system depending on the information they know. Or you could show something which is plainly ridiculous and say, this is what people teach, or this is what people do, and it's all, stupid, but you tell them, well, this is credentialed, and that's got the US government, you know, logo on top of it. It goes across there. Now, there is sort of like evidence that people understand this. Now, the question is that you've got really two versions that the current statements that I've made is that research, where sort of naked research, is highly vulnerable to this. So this is research outside a research institution is what you would call naked amateur, could be in certain circumstances amateur research. And a lot of people do, a lot of private independent researchers do undertake this, and they get this feeling of isolation and a thousand ideas. I was going to say that there's, in Canberra, there's the Independent Researchers Association, and it's largely women who've been rejected out of systems, but they still say, well, I have this way across and I have a value and I'm going to do it. So sort of they live a double life. Now, unfortunately, when you are actually researching something to go into a system, you have to sort of negotiate that. You have to live your double life and go across. One of the things I do find is that if you can just ladle out criticism so much, you can actually switch off someone's license to operate. So, this is, I suppose, it's an interesting aspect that you can actually criticise someone so much that people are there dealing with the criticism, people are dealing with the criticism around them. You can essentially switch them off, and you can actually switch off a person or a situation. And when you switch it off, you effectively cut down who you deal with, what happens, the range of things going ahead, which is very convenient for you to achieve your particular idea. So hopefully you are criticizing someone with the purpose, not just randomly, or because you'd sound insane, but if you consistently and persistently criticize things and shut something down, you're obviously doing it for a purpose. And obviously, you want to achieve a goal. Now, you're achieving that goal by criticism, and social mechanism. And in a certain sense, that if you go down the line of using social mechanism to criticize or shut something, so where this is going is that a prototype is suggesting a new way of doing something, your creative stuff. You are producing something on its journey from idea to something merchandisable. So your a prototype is by definition a sort of a revolution, and it is a way of moving forward. The alternative way of going forward is called a sort of form of social pruning. That's where you unleash criticism at such a level. So there's sort of two levels of criticism. So I'm just trying to, I don't know whether this actually makes sense to people. So prototype is risk, vulnerability, your creativity with fragility. That is, you create first and then build support out. And there's the creative destructiveness with it there. Whereas, so there's, it's a very positive aspect of it. Or you can be for me, I can see this dichotomy here, or you can be have this incredible negative outlook, where your idea is to socially prune things that you don't like. It's sort of like creating a path into the future by napalming what you don't want. The only green valley is the green valley that you have designated. Everything else is suffering because simply to actually you're making it's sort of like the other hand things is that you credential things. Something has a reputation. Beware of people who focus on reputation, because they are also the people who can actually make the concern about making things merchandisable. And so now the problem is that if everything is merchandisable, they mightn't float to the top. There's got to be what you call a bit of commercial mongrel in people, so people ready to take out the opposition and push it across. Now the idea is that this opposition will resist, and then there's this sort of like sort of unguided sequential law of evolution, a survival of the fittest. And so this sort of feeling that you compete and there's a bit of mongrel and you attack and bring things down. I know this doesn't really make sense, but it does to me, unfortunately. So one aspect, you've got this innocent, fragile prototype which is in its journey to go forward, and it requires, I suppose, essentially love, you know, to do it, and sort of understanding. So you build a prototype, and it dies, and as it dies, its life has got meaning. It's sort of this beautiful, it's like a child, and it lives a beautiful life. It was a bit disabled and it didn't have a good opportunity, but its story means something. You bring it forward and you celebrate it, you bury it, and then this sort of like orphan community of an idea where you have to smuggle food into it, to the idea. You have to do all this, you know, love and hope and push it across. And then on the opposite side of things, you can see, well, this doesn't survive, and this, you know, you get these people, King of the Road. This, I remember I had this novel, or my parents had a novel in the shed called King's Row, and it had Ronald Reagan from the story and doing slapping a woman on the front. But it's this idea of power and reputation, and you're able to just absolutely criticize everything into the ground. Now, of course, the idea is that criticizing something, or a criticism, would bounce off. The criticism has to have, in this world, social import. You have to be socially unacceptable due to the amount of criticism that can actually be unleashed on a small prototype. It has to absolutely be the idea is the criticism is not just a guiding criticism, it's a crushing criticism. It's to eliminate what you don't want, so the only thing left is the way that you do want forward. Now, of course, this is sort of contrary to prototyping, where you build a prototype with best intent, the best that you can do, and it lives its life and it fails and it tells its life story, and that's sort of like that positivity in failure, whereas the person says, oh, look, I've been prototyping this new widget, you're only using a few dollars. Oh no, I spent $1,000, I've got something so much better. And of course, it's sort of like this got to be fundamentally, can you have a dumb person prototype. Part of intelligence is seeing things that other people can't see. You see a future that other people can't see. So a prototype is a journey into a future that is not yet receptive to it. It is a So I can't actually use a prototype in day-to-day life. A prototype is imagining a future. It's imagining a future space. Now, if you can shut down that person's future space, it's sort of, there's all this social energy associated with it. Like, I produce a prototype or an invention into the future, people are very much want to say, you know, several things in terms of they're insecure about their own future, I think fundamentally might be the story. And so they say very certain things. How dare you encroach on my future? I don't understand. My future is going to be just reacting to things. Yeah, look, basically their plan to the future is to buy things and react to make it up on the day, whereas a prototype is a fundamental planning tool. It's sort of like a fundamental planning tool in terms of you will build a map, say a little map of Europe, and you move your pins across it, and you move your pins so you can physically see. Your prototype is a window into an imaginary window into the future. Isn't that beautiful? A prototype is a window into a future. Now, there's a certain amount of play. You play with a prototype. You imagine a prototype. It's a developmental form of play which is lost. So the important thing is that a toy and prototype are very much similar things. So people learn to play when they're young, and when they're older, they no longer play, because they you can't really have, say, your bank manager who's got a lot of, you know, the merchandisable world is a world no longer having play in it. So you can't have your bank manager going brum 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 and the little car going up, and you can't watch them play in terms of play. Is something that you can't actually communicate to people in your social situation. You can't see them playing or being jestful. I think it was captured in, you can get away with it or not, as the case may be. They said, surely you are joking, Dr. Fireman. And that is this entire thing of play and conjecture. And so your entire thing is that scientists is at play. So there's this idea of this sort of prototype with the inner prototype, that is that idea of the use of the prototype is, the prototypes that I'm building, is the idea is that children continue the culture of prototyping. So prototyping is sort of failing at several levels. One is that it's a prototype and it's not merchandisable. You know, that's fairly obvious thing. It is a prototype is to prototype prototyping. The children, the prototype is a product of constructive analytical play, you know, play with oomph. So the idea, the prototype is a play item for experimentation and creativity and the ability to process risks. There's sort of these communal things that people read books, you know, like a novel is a prototype. Community. Now, here's a very interesting about how people So it is interesting that people have their prototyping needs met by safe communal prototyping, and that is a group of people. So you have novels. A novel is a prototype play area. So here we go. Must be getting a bit late coming home. Hopefully I can still drive my daughter at this stage. Yeah, so it's very much out there. Now the interesting thing is, I think, memes and there's a lot of things which happen in play besides people just seeing, testing what is the best way, testing ideas in a non... The cost of ideas is reduced in there, but there's also the fundamental idea driving both merchandisability and prototyping, and the play is the sense of your membership and community. So essentially that's a very important point, that so a lot of people are doing that to get a future, but the fundamental thing is the fundamental human driver is belonging. So if once you don't belong, you can't get resources, you can't survive, your gene gets crushed. So ultimately, we have genetically preserved people who are able to intellectually compromise so that their genes survive. So at the fundamental thing, that society is great due to beneficial compromise. We say, look, if you're a good citizen, you've compromised. So this compromise going forward. So we still need the ability to experiment. And there's a very interesting archaeological dig of how come the Carthaginian population was less adaptive, less cohesive than the Roman one. And then they did, from the archaeological digs, they had no public spaces, no public buildings, their public life isn't there. So there's this sort of morphing of what should be prototyping, which is necessary for prototyping, because what's happened here is that we're in an age where we have knowledge and materials to enable people to prototype. Previously, the entire population has been struggling to feed itself. It's been able to do it. We've got the recipe to allow a new age of prototyping. That is, where people can actually experiment. They no longer have to poke a stick in the soil and wait for a potato to grow, and then when they grow three potatoes, one goes to the Lord, one goes to the church, and they get to eat the third potato. So it's everything works on them not being creative, because we need them to work so much. Now we don't need people to work. We are perhaps in an area, a time where the where the non-prototype, the merchandisability, can actually take a back seat. Merchandisability is not that we don't, it's not an either or thing. We've got merchandisability is covered. It is not important that everyone in the... Most important thing is that most people are passengers, and that we, at critical points, do a sanity check before we do anything. But apart from that, the basic thing is, why not? Why not actually be adventurers? Why not have prototyping? It's that area. Now, unfortunately, I've reached this point where I have done this particular thing, built a prototype, and it's not going anywhere. And it's not going anywhere, not because it can't do what it's designed to do, not because it hasn't got value, but because of all these, this huge, long, appears to be a long arc around the obstacle of obstinance. This is an obstacle of obstinance. And look, the path around an object is almost by definition circuitous. If you've designed something to block something, the path around must automatically, almost by definition, be circuitous. How that describes. So, just in summary, you've got the prototypes. So, a prototype is an imagination of the future, a low cost, obviously, low cost, high risk, one where the risk is revalued. You value its failure. It's got a high risk of failure, but that risk that the failure tells you a lot about it, of the future, and of something on the path of merchandisable. So it's got a future. It's got something which is got a future of modification designed in it. Whereas if I buy a car, I just want it to be credentialed and operate as is forever. That is so it can be serviced. There's a whole series of reasons for it. There's also the idea that people's valuing of themselves is sort of corralled into this non-creative, judgmental, negative viewpoint, where they will, behavior-wise, start criticizing, and their criticism is beyond constructive criticism, it's destructive criticism, and that's how they actually shape their future. They destroy all other futures. So the one future that they do want, that the future that they are thinking, is there. So, well, what do I have? You're at Tiffany, and you want to buy a diamond necklace. So what you do is you get a sledgehammer and you go around Tiffany's and smash up the tiara, smash up the diamond rings, and the only thing which is left is the necklaces, because people have been smashing the crap out of it. And that's a certain way of selecting futures, is by going down that path. Of course, someone who's in there with a sledgehammer getting to ideas is not going to be your person who's going to be very good at evaluating. And here's this new thing. What is it? It's a belly button diamond. What the heck? Okay, that being said, that's the end of this podcast. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.